Also, I'd like to reflect what Mr. Hansen said. Jody, that was very beautiful, and we really appreciate that. I was wondering when Mr. Hansen, you know, tapped me on the shoulder there as he's coming up and said, well, he's going to say, you're fired or something like that, you know. Boy, I said, boy, I didn't know I'd goofed up that badly already. So you never know, do you? But anyway, I have to say, I'm becoming more familiar with you. I'm starting to know more names as time goes on. It used to be only knew Heather Martin's name. I always thought of her Heather Edwards, of course, because we knew her when she was young. I'm not saying she's old now, by the way. So anyway, now I'm getting to know many more of you. And so it's really great, you know, to be up here again. And I am becoming more comfortable with it. I'm realizing it's not that much further than Morgantown for me, because I come up from Parkersburg on 77 and zip over on 70. Or when I go up to Morgantown, I get to go through Clarksburg, where there's about three or four traffic lights and slow speed limits and all of that. So, again, and then the harrowing drive. But I do notice a similarity. 79 is similar to 70 as far as a harrowing drive between Morgantown and Clarksburg, and those trucks and cars and all of that. So you have a lot of that up here. But when I was young, which, believe it or not, young people I was, there was a time when I was young, and I made a lot of mistakes. I can remember as cousins, and I'm sure glad my folks never knew about this. I don't know if we ever did tell them, by the way. We would go down, you know, we'd be running on the farm. My dad was a farmer, and my cousins would come out, my brother and sister and cousin. We'd be running around the farm, going to this place, and there was this railroad trestle that was right by the Follett place that we owned and dad owned at that time, or harvested crops there. And we'd walk over the bridge. But I'm not talking about on top of the tracks. I'm talking about the girders underneath the bridge. That's the kind of thing we did. I never even thought about it until I got older. I says, boy, I'm sure glad we're here yet, you know. Just about didn't make it. My cousin one time, when he came out to our farm, he was about probably 10, 11, 12 years old, something like that. In the old days, we had a jammer. Log jammer, any of you know what those are? It was two poles put together like that, and you would pull the logs up and put them on a truck. We called it a jammer. Well, my cousin, for whatever reason, decided to, you know, climb to the top of that jammer. And he did. My mom came out, and she just about died of fright, you know. And there he was up there because he liked to climb for some reason. And we did that. One of the things, though, my folks told us that I forgot about, somehow one of my mom's lamps in the living room was busted. And so she sat us all down. There were three of us, Chet and Bonnie and me. And I don't even remember this. She told us later. She says, who did it? No answer. Who did it? I don't remember this, but she says none of us would say. And I don't remember it, but I don't even know who did it. I don't remember. But we all do things as youth, don't we, that are different, and we make mistakes. Even as adults, we make mistakes. I know somebody called me last night about the update, and I got to correct something on one of the places on the locations for the holy days. Anyway, again, we always are doing things. And today we're emphasizing young people. It's great to see the Bielstein up here, Tim, leading songs, and all the young people around playing the piano over here. I know some of the Martins is playing the piano and all of that. So I wanted to talk about a subject that is really important for young people. And by the way, I hope you old people don't tune out, because I've seen a lot of old people that don't do this very well either. Okay? It's called Growing in Wisdom, is the title of today's sermon. Growing in Wisdom. Let's start with the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 3 and verse 19. Proverbs 3 and verse 19. The Bible talks about the wisdom of God, that He had it from the very beginning, you know, of creation. And notice what He says about wisdom. The Lord, by wisdom, founded the earth. And by understanding, He established the heavens. As I get older, we realize how unbelievably complex we as human beings are. And also, what human beings can do with our bodies. Like Michael Jordan, the way he could jump, you know, from the foul line to slam the ball down. I know I was refereeing out to Winter Family Weekend a couple years ago, especially with the boys. And I just noticed the jumping that these young guys can do. I jump 2 or 3 inches, and then I wonder if I'm going to land right, you know. As you get older, the ditches look bigger. Ever notice that? Of course, Mr. Henson, he never gets older. I don't know if he gets any smarter either, but, you know. Anyway, we hope we get smarter or wiser is what we're talking about today. All right, Proverbs 1, then, is really the part that is very pertinent to us and to the young people of God's church, and to all young people, frankly. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, judgment. Notice, also I'm going to read you a definition a little bit later here, but also notice that defining wisdom, justice. You see, wisdom involves justice, which often we see in the world, you know, doesn't have. Judgment, which you're seeing increasingly in the world, doesn't have. And all of these things are an equity, fairness, to give prudence to the simple, and notice, especially for today, emphasizing the young people, to the young man, knowledge and instruction. I know there are many things as a young minister that I didn't know when I was sent out to the field ministry in 1969, would you believe? Over 40-some years ago. And I remember as a young minister when somebody got sick, I was unsympathetic. But I remember going to them and said, what's the matter with them? How come they're in a bad attitude? Why are they depressed? Well, then you have something like that happen to you and your attitude changes, believe me. You learn things, don't you? And sometimes it's difficult for a young person to understand what somebody else is going through until you've gone through it. It's difficult, for people to understand. Like living in Africa, like Cheryl and I did. In fact, one of our elders in Africa was recently attacked, Mr. Levy. And he was attacked in his place. I mean, I'd actually visited Tony and Brenda before we left South Africa. He lived in a gated community. You know, it's so amazing when we got back to America, my wife was paranoid. We had to lock the doors and try to put bars on, whatever. I mean, she was paranoid because in Africa, you have to make sure that you're locked. Sometimes if you don't, even if you have alarms. It was always very interesting to have people come to Africa and they'd come in and I'd explain to them about the alarms. And as I explained, their eyes would get bigger and bigger. And you could see them wondering, maybe I should go back to the United States right now. But Tony and Brenda were in our place. It was a guarded community. And fortunately, woke up in the middle of the night with a gun to their head. And you could imagine what that does. They didn't kill them any, fortunately. But they thought they were safe because they were in a community like that. It's amazing. In our house, we sometimes forget to lock the front door now. We don't normally, by the way. But, we try to lock it, which you should. But, we live in Belpre, a little community, and we don't worry about it that much. The neighborhood kids leave the basketball on the lawn for days. Just stays there. A bicycle might be different. But anyway, the basketball, people just don't do that. And we learn, though. See, that's where wisdom comes from, too. Learning. Let me give you a definition from Webster's dictionary. And using wisdom is so important. Wisdom, it defines it, the right use or exercise of knowledge. I want to emphasize that. The right use or exercise of knowledge. You can be a genius, can't you? And not have any common sense. So often today we see people that don't make common sense judgments. the choice of laudable ends, the dictionary goes on, and of the best means to accomplish them. This is wisdom in act, effect, or practice. If wisdom is to understand as a faculty of the mind, it is a faculty of discerning or judging what is the most just, proper, and useful, and if it is to be considered as an acquirement, it is the knowledge of and use of what is best. Because we can all have done that, where we haven't been wise and not made good decisions. I remember years ago, one lady in the congregation was, and she had an older car, and she couldn't get it fixed. For some reason, the radiator was always hot on it. So finally, she got so frustrated, and she couldn't afford it, by the way, she went down and bought a new car. That was her solution. Well, she took it to, I think, one of the members of the church, and finally, guess what he realized? The thermostat was on backwards. That was all that was wrong with it. And once he did that, it was fixed. You see, that was not using good judgment, was it? A form of wisdom is talking about here. Wisdom in the first sense, back to the dictionary, or practical wisdom is nearly synonymous with discretion. From Nelson's Illustrated Bible Dictionary, wisdom, the ability to judge correctly and to follow the best course of action. Now, here's one of the problems today. We hear even government officials say, oh, get an education. And by the way, please get an education. Nothing wrong with that. That's good. But let me give you an example. There's nothing wrong. I don't believe in, you know, giving money to teachers and all that. That's fine. My dad grew up in Rockford, Washington. Our farm is below a place called Micah Peak. It's called Micah Peak School. It was a little tiny school. My dad was always getting in trouble, by the way. He was one of those. He was a character when he told us his stories. But anyway, he was in this little school. He never had a computer. I think his sister taught for a while, by the way. Carolyn, one of the Johnses, taught there for a while. And, you know, he could do math, science. I mean, Dad was very intelligent. I never thought of him at one time as being, boy, he's really inferior because he went to a little school. I think later on he might have gone to Rockford, which is a bigger school. But the point was, you know, he didn't have any of these things that we have today. I know I went back to Freeman High School where I graduated from, and I was shocked. I mean, it's unbelievable. They got computers in every school, every room. Sometimes there's a whole room of them, computers. The shop, I couldn't believe the shop. They had all these machines. You couldn't believe the welding booths. Boy, when I was in school, you'd put on a helmet and you welded, and that was it. I never did very good in that one, by the way. That was one. I went to college. I think I had to do that, too, at Washington State. And, you know, they pull it. Those guys are welders. You know, they put in a machine. And mine was always pulling out too fast, let's put it that way. But it was incredible the things that they had in that school. For those kids. They also, by the way, even that is a little outdoor school, they have a guard that comes like twice a week or something, even there. Well, it's amazing. All right, let's go to a story in the Bible of a woman that used good wisdom. A story of Abigail, 1 Samuel 25. 1 Samuel 25. And here is a woman of exceptional ability. And she used wisdom. And so you can know things, but if you don't apply the knowledge, you know, it isn't going to be any good. I mean, let's say somebody gave you a computer and didn't tell you how to use it. Sometimes they can tell you how to use it, doesn't do any good, right? But they give you a computer, if you don't know how to use it, it's worthless to you, isn't it? It's interesting. I'm one of these guys that loves a gadget, but I always hate getting one because the first time you get it, you got to go through the book and you always got to work it out. I recently got a newer laptop. My laptop was getting a little old. The speakers didn't work on it, so I thought I'd get a new one. They're not very expensive these days, by the way. But the first thing, Windows 8. You know, I don't know about you. I'd like to talk to the Microsoft people. Please don't change things. The old timers remember WordPerfect? Anybody remember WordPerfect? It does about everything you ever needed, right? But, you know, we always got somebody that says, oh, you've got to get this newer program. Well, it's got more buzzes and whistles and bells and all of that stuff, and you don't know how to use it. I've even had times where I couldn't figure out how to turn it on, you know. Where's the switch? They moved it on me. You know, whatever. But anyway, that's another subject. Let's get back to this. The wisdom of Abigail. The wisdom of Abigail. Well, Samuel died, and Israel gathered together and lamented over him. Now remember, David was running around. By the way, we heard, you know, a very interesting sermonette about that. And on the way up here, by the way, I did hear the bird song, Turn, Turn, Turn. I got one of these old folk songs, by the way. There's a lot of them, you know, of the old folk songs of Peter, Paul, Mary and all of it. And that was one of them on there. And it's rather a catchy song, but it's, you know, it's kind of a rock song. But, you know, I guess you can forgive me for that. You had a sermonette on it, so... Anyway, it's an interesting point, isn't it? How these things go around. But Samuel died, and there was a man from David was running around. He was scared. In fact, you look in David's life, and you look at the end, how he faked being insane and all of that. You can see the stress finally got to David of doing that. And that's the interesting part of the story. But this one, he was hiding, and there was a man, verse 2, and he went to the wilderness of Paran. And there was a man of Moan whose business was in Carmel, and the man was very rich. And he had 3,000 sheep, 1,000 goats, and he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. And the name of the man was Nabal, and the name of the wife was Abigail. And she was a woman of good understanding and beautiful appearance. She was a very wise person. But the man was harsh and evil in his doings. And he was of the house of Caleb. And when David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep, David sent 10 young men. And David said to the young man, go to Carmel and go to Nabal and greet him by in my name. Thus you shall say to him, who lives in prosperity, peace to you, peace to your house, peace to all that you have. Now I have heard that you have shearers. Your shepherds were with us and we did not hurt them. So he's camping up there, basically, running from Saul. And, you know, we didn't do anything. They came to the sheep, we didn't take your sheep or anything. And now we're asking as a gratitude, ask your young men, and they will tell you, and they will let your young men find favor in your eyes. Verse 8 of 1 Samuel 25. For we come on a feast day. Please give us whatever your hand, your servants, to your son David. So when David's young men came, they spoke to Nabal according to all the words in the name of David and waited. And then Nabal answered David's servants and said, who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants nowadays who break away each other from his man master. Shall I take from my bread and water and meat that I have killed from my shearers and give it to men when I do not know where they come from? Now, I think that's exaggeration. I'm sure everybody knew where David was. You know, was coming from. Of course, he was gathering all kinds of people. Some of them weren't the best either, if you look and see in the Bible. And by the way, there was at least a couple hundred. I'm not sure the number we're here at this time doesn't say, but there would come to be a rather sizable number with David. And if he wanted to just kill him, anytime he could have. Now, here is where you can see Nabal had no wisdom, did he? I mean, this man could have just taken the sheep. Not even ask them. But David, at least cordial enough to send down and say, okay, you know, we've been up here. We've kind of helped you out a little bit. How about, you know, a little gratitude? You know, of course, he didn't have any, did he? And so David then said to his men, every man gird on his sword. So every man girded his sword. And David also girded his sword. Now, I want you to notice that. I know one time I heard somebody say, well, Abigail was disobedient to her husband. Well, not really. Her husband knows she was going, I guess, because he didn't tell her not to go. And also, by the way, she was trying to protect her husband. Because who was David going to kill if you look at this one? See? Not one man. All she had to do was just wait and go and kill the man, and then the women would have been okay. She was trying to protect her husband in this, by the way. So one of the young men told Abigail, and I think he actually says here, there will not be a man alive. So they were likely to save the women. And then one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, look, David sent messengers from the village to greet her master, and he reviled them. But the men were very good to us, and we were not hurt, nor did we miss anything as long as we accompanied them when we were in the fields. So they knew that Abigail was different. And she was a woman of wisdom, as you can see. They were a wall to us both by night and day, all the time we were with them keeping the sheep. So they saw this injustice, and they probably heard, wait a minute, This guy's got a couple hundred soldiers basically with him. They're warriors. In the modern term, we are toast. You know, if he comes down here, we're goners. And now, therefore, know and consider what you will do, for harm is determined against our master and all his household, for he is such a scoundrel that one cannot speak to him. And Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves of bread, and 2 skins of wine, and fine sheep already dressed, and 5 seahs of roasted grain, 100 clusters of raisins. And so she took quite a thing, quite a meal for them. They're going to have a good feast on that. Showing they had a lot of men, didn't they? Hundreds of men were up there. So she said to her servants, "Go on before me, see I'm coming after you." But she did not tell her husband Nabal. So it was, as she rode on the donkey, that she went under the cover of a hill, and there were David and his men coming toward her. Oh, wow, she just about was too late. And David had said, "Surely in vain I have protected all this men, and all this fellow I had in the wilderness, so that nothing will be missed of all belongs to him. He has repaid me evil for good." And notice, "May God do so and more also to the enemies, David, if I do leave one male of all who belong to him by morning light." So the threat was not to Abigail. It was to the men. Now when Abigail saw David, notice what happened. Here's something of wisdom, and young people. You know, for instance, if an officer stops you, I'm going to stop and give a little story here a little bit. Don't mouth off. You know, best way is to answer kindly. You're more likely to get off. But if you're like, "Officer, I wasn't doing anything. What's the matter? You know, how come you stopped me?" It's your attitude, isn't it? We'll get into the soft answer, you know, turns away wrath later. But so often when you're young, "Oh boy, you know, I wasn't doing anything. I'm going to mouth off to this guy." Well, that doesn't work. And the Abigail knew that. No, she doesn't say, "Boy, David, what's the matter with you?" You know, first thing she does, notice, she dismounted quickly from the donkey, fell on her face. Before David and bowed down to the ground. And she fell on at his feet and said, "Oh, me, my Lord, and let this be iniquity on me." Now notice, you know, she didn't necessarily blame her husband or whatever. She does mention that he's a scoundrel, that he has this attitude problem. But she said, she doesn't say, "Well, I didn't know," and you know, whatever. She did say she didn't know, and she was going to do something about it. And notice this, "And please let your maidservant speak in your ears and hear the words of your maidservant. Please let my Lord, not let my Lord regard this scoundrel Nabal, for as his name is, so is he." Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. "But I, your young maidservant, did not see the young men of my Lord whom you sent. Now therefore, my Lord, as my servant lives, and as your soul lives, since the Lord has held you back." And notice this now. The one thing she apparently knows about David, and they've already heard, is that David is a just man. He is a man of character. I mean, it's interesting, the contrast between David and Saul. Both of them make terrible mistakes. But David repents of his, doesn't he? That's the difference. She apparently understood about the character. Now, it's interesting, young men too, and women, when you're, I'll get that, like you're in a class about evolutionists, how you can handle that. So she knew the situation she was in. And she knew that what David was like. And it says, "Now therefore, my Lord, as my soul lives and as your soul lives, since the Lord has held you back from coming to bloodshed and avenging yourself." You know, David was really great in other areas. Saul, he had what, 2 times at least? 2 or 3 times he could kill them? And one time the Bible actually says that God put a sleep on the soldiers. He just walked into camp. That's amazing. What amazing. How many people would do that? And he said, "No, I will not touch the Lord's anointed." Abigail apparently understood this part of David's character. "Now, this present which your maidservant has brought," verse 27, Well, let me finish the other scripture there, verse 26. Brought you back from avenging yourself with your own hand. Now then, let your enemies and those who seek harm for my Lord be his neighbor. And now this present, which your maidservant has brought to you, my Lord, let it be given to the young men who follow my Lord. Please forgive the trespass of your maidservant. You see, here she doesn't blame Nabal even, does she? This is the way he is. I just didn't know. I'm really sorry. I'd have done something about this. For the Lord will certainly make my Lord an enduring house. Oh, now she does something also that shows wisdom. And also faith in God, doesn't she? She says, I know, David, God has appointed you king. And you're going to be king. And basically she's saying, you don't want this blood on your head. For instance, the servants. Nabal was a guy that was guilty. The servants, they didn't do anything. They even going to kill innocent people because of one guy. Now, you know, by the way, you must realize too that always these stories are condensed versions. They can't give all the words in the Bible, you know, that were probably said. She might even, I would assume, might have said something like, David, these servants are innocent. Are you going to kill them too? That's implied here, by the way. All right. Yet man has arisen to pursue you. Well, let's see. Because my Lord fights the battles of the Lord, and evil is not found in you throughout your days. Notice that wisdom. David, you're better than this. See, she appeals not to his bad side, to his angry side, but to the side that she knew about David, that he was a just man. And shall come to pass that when the Lord has done my Lord doing all the good that he has spoken to you, verse 30, that he has spoken and has appointed you ruler over Israel, that this will be no grief to you. Oh, in other words, David, you're going to feel guilty about this in the future. You do this thing to these innocent people. Now, Nabal might not be innocent, but these others are. That you have shed blood without cause, or that my Lord has avenged himself. But when the Lord has dealt with my Lord, then remember your maidservant. And David immediately saw it, didn't he? Now, there's something about wisdom too, young men and women. I've learned always when you get something difficult happen to you, to not make a decision sometimes for a few days. If you get a bad letter, which I've had. I had recently a bad letter about a member of the church. And first thing I went to was call him up and like, run it, you shut up. And this member is a great guy, which I think he is, by the way. Okay. But I've learned that you wait a few days. And then you can think about it logically and answer less emotionally. And you get a better reaction to it. You might say the same things, but the tone of your voice, and also that's another thing to remember as we'll talk about later. The tone of your voice, it makes it different. But when my Lord has dealt, and David said, blessed is your advice, and blessed are you, verse 33, because you have kept me from coming to bloodshed and from avenging myself with my own hand. That's a big lesson there, isn't it? David learned something in the New Testament. Bless those that persecute you. It's not easy to do, is it? What's the first thing? Somebody cuts us on the road. What's the first thing we want to do? Honk the horn. Ah! You know? I've mentioned in Morgantown that Parkersburg, one of the nicest places, they don't honk the horn a lot of times. But go to Houston or Dallas. I don't know about Pittsburgh. You know, Pittsburgh, I'd probably honk there. There's Mr. Hansen's there. That's one reason they honk, I'm sure, you know. Anyway, the bigger cities, the good news is Parkersburg, a small little town. And sometimes if you sit at a light, they'll actually, well, sometimes they'll honk, but most of the time they kind of sit there and they wait because we don't have the traffic jam that you do in most of the other areas. You ought to see Dallas. Well, see, vengeance. David didn't take it, did he? And then we all know the rest of the story then. Nabal gets drunk. So, again, notice the wisdom. She doesn't tell him when he's drunk. See? Because when people drink, we all know what can happen. Violent people are sometimes worse, aren't they? She waits till he's sober. I mean, all the way through this, you can see the wisdom of Abigail. She appeals to David's better conscience. She doesn't. She takes the fault herself. You know, she says Nabal is a scoundrel, but still she says, I'm sorry. I wish I'd have known about it. I'd have got here earlier. And then she appeals to David's better judgment. And also she says something. I'm sure he appreciated it. He said, David, I know you're going to be king. God's going to make you king. She had faith in God, didn't she? Did all those things. And then she was wise not to tell Nabal at night. And now we see the point where God intervenes. We all know the end of the story. In the morning, verse 36, and Nabal's heart was merry, so she didn't say anything. So on his morning, when the wine had gone from him, Nabal, the wife told him this thing, said, bang. I'm paraphrasing here. He was a goner. Apparently, if you were reading modern day, you'd probably say he had a heart attack. Which, by the way, somebody gets a big temper tantrum can get, can't they? I've seen it, but heard of it before. Book, they were talking about this one doctor who got up and pulled a temper tantrum in some kind of convention and fell dead right in front of him. Because when you pull a temper tantrum, what happens to your blood pressure and all that? That's probably what physically happened. But also, I think there probably is intervention from God. You know? And when David heard that, he said, blessed be the Lord, verse 39, who has pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal and has kept his servant from evil. So, here's something else. David learned, didn't he? You know, brother, we've seen evils in this world. In World War II, I can't remember the name of the city, but it was a city in France where the Germans, when the Allies were coming on Normandy, they were coming in, the Germans were losing, they gathered the whole town, I can't remember, several thousand. But the women one place, but the men another place, shot every one of them. Shot them dead. I can't remember, they thought they were helping the Allies or something. And that town remains to this day in the ruins. Nobody's ever gone back to build it up again as a memorial to those people. You talk about a lack of wisdom, a lack of judgment. You know, we live in a world where righteousness so often is turned aside, isn't it? It just happens, you know, over and over again. And this is one of those stories. Let's go to the Proverbs 51. We're all acquainted with this. But this is one of the biggest things for all of us, young people especially. You know, when you learn as you get older. Proverbs 15 and verse 1. A soft answer turns away wrath. That's exactly what Abigail did, didn't she? A soft answer turns away wrath. Humility, too, that shows, doesn't it? You know, when people get arrogant, they make big mistakes, and that's where wisdom flies. Something that helped the Allies in World War II. Hitler was about ready to attack England, and all the way along, it turned out he wanted to attack Russia. And, of course, Western Europe is quite a bit different than Russia. Western Europe is rather small, and the Allies weren't prepared, and so he decided to attack Russia instead. Didn't even give his troops winter clothes because they thought they'd defeat the Russians. Only the problem with Russia was it is unbelievably huge. And it's probably a mistake that actually turned world history, brethren. And, of course, we know God also intervenes there. But lack of wisdom can cause you to do really weird stuff in that time. He's so arrogant. See, there's another thing about wisdom. Wisdom means you understand what you are and what your capabilities are. Fortunately for the world, in a way, you know, Hitler didn't evaluate the Russians correctly. He misevaluated. He thought, well, they're just a bunch of dodos and they don't know what they're doing. He didn't realize you get 1,000 miles of trucks trying to supply somebody, and the Russians burned everything as they left, like the Germans did also. But notice, a soft answer turns away wrath, but harsh words stirs up anger. Well, if you're in school and your teacher says something, and so often, brethren, when you hear a fight, you hear some poor woman gets killed or something happens. But you know what happened before that was a big fight. Oftentimes you see that. You hear about it, that this couple was fighting. All of a sudden, the woman ends up dead so often, sadly. And I'm not faulting the woman here at all, brethren, but soft answers on either side will make a difference, won't they? But it's awful hard for us. Notice verse 2 then. A tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly. Uses knowledge rightly. You know, oftentimes people know the same facts. A good example of that is evolution or creation. The facts are not disputed. The cell is complex. The geologic record is, you know, extensive with a lot of catastrophes. Geologists on both sides of the fence. They all have identical facts. In fact, as we go on and on, brethren, we find out that life is more complex than we've ever believed. As we find out more things, it's unbelievable. Our brains have enough, you know, many contacts as all the stars in space or something like that. I mean, it's incredible what happens. Our kidneys are an absolute miracle. And by the way, you want to keep your kidneys, don't you? Man hasn't come up with one anything like it yet. You can get dialysis, but it's not very good, is it? In fact, a lot of times they try to kidney transplant. Evolutionists haven't even produced a single cell yet. Yet they say it evolved. You see, the facts and the evolution and creationists are both the same. Both sides would admit that. But it's the interpretation of the facts, isn't it? See, that's where wisdom comes in. You can see that in a courtroom a lot of times. The same thing happens. The facts are pretty much the same on both sides. But it's the way they're presented. It's the way they're going on. And also, it's the prejudices of people involved. Well, it's incredible, all the facts that are coming out about even the universe, brethren, itself. The universe is finely tuned. You know, there are like 15 or so constants that have to be exactly right. If gravity were slightly different, we'd all be ants. Squished. Slightly different. If the sun were closer, you know, to us, there wouldn't be anything. If we were further away, we'd be like Mars or frozen wasteland, you know, whatever. It's amazing. The evolutionists, they all admit, let's give a fact. The moon is very important to the earth. You know that, don't you? Because it goes around, stirs up the oceans. I know Craig Harper, when we have the ox roast, has a pond there. If you come down there, don't drink any water out of it, okay? It's green in July. That's what the ocean would be like without the moon. See? Oh, but you know, these are supposed to be intelligent people. This is the going theory on how the moon was created. Some kind of asteroid hit the earth, bounced it off, and went into exactly the right orbit. Boy, oh boy. That sounds like the fiction, you know, that the lamp in our house was broken by itself. You know what I mean? I mean, what do these are intelligent. They're brave. They've got great IQs. You see, it's not the facts, is it? We as creationists, we believe the same thing, that the moon is in a place. And they'll admit. You know, it's amazing. We think we've got the weather figured out. You know, when people are saying it's going to do this or that 10 years from now. Never forget, about 2 years ago, I asked Mr. Sproul about this. It's some of you Morgantown people. Mr. Sproul called me. Morty says, there's going to be an ice storm here in Morgantown. We better cancel church. Amen. Cancel church. Guess what happened? No storm. Now, I don't want to get into arguments about this, but if they can't predict the weather 3 hours in advance, how can they do it 10 years in advance, huh? Or 20 years in advance? You see the problem? The problem is, it's complicated. That's like life. Life is extremely complicated. Especially when you're raising teenagers. Oh, no comment. But it does get more complicated, doesn't it, as they get older. And there are more challenges, of course, as part of life. But the facts are not disputed. And that's the important thing we need to recognize, brethren, young people. The facts are not disputed. And I wanted to mention for young people, when you get in class, you can make a decision let's say the evolutionist guy gets up there and he says, do you believe in evolution? Or we may not ask him, he may say something. Now, some people get up in class and challenge him. Now, there's actually two ways you can approach this. And this is what I would tell you. If I were you, this is the thing I think of. What is my main goal being in this class? To convince the teacher that not to believe in evolution? Is that going to work? Well, I know a lot of you, of course it won't, will it? Now, if your main goal is, like some people are, evangelizing, you want to try to convince them, then go ahead and get up in class. But I'll tell you what's going to happen. Yeah, you're going to get an F or whatever, D or whatever. See, but if your main goal is to be in school and get a graduate, now look at you never lie. You never lie. So they say in the test, well, evolution is certain to happen. I remember years ago I had a test like that, and I was just coming in to listen to Mr. Armstrong and here in the church at Washington State. They had a question like that, and I knew the answer. Boy, I got an A in biology. And I actually put the X down because I wanted to put a comment. This is what the book said. See? This is what you said. Now, if they ask you what I believe, then, ooh, that's different. I'm going to have to answer truthfully. You don't lie. But if you're giving me a test, and we all understand, the understanding in this test is they want to see if you understand the information given in class. Then you're somewhat like a robot. You're supposed to answer that, right? Sadly. But that's the way it is. So if I were a young person in class, some people might want to do this. They might, but realize, here's where wisdom comes in. Wisdom means you anticipate the results of what you do. And are you willing to go with those results? Now, I'm not saying you ever lie. You don't have to lie, but you don't have to confront either. See? So if it comes up in class, and you don't confront, and the professor may never know, because he probably will never ask you. And you get your grade in class and you go on. But if you start confronting them in the intellectual institutions of this world, I'll warn you. That's why you need to anticipate. People lose their degrees. Young Earth creationists all the time get discriminated against. There was a guy, wasn't a young Earth creationist, that worked in Washington, D.C. for the Smithsonian, I think it was. And he wrote an article that was friendly to intelligent design. And boom. So much for being fair, huh? You see, the world's professors and biologists have made a decision, not on the basis of facts, brethren, where the facts lead. They made a decision on the basis of emotion and prejudice. And that's where wisdom comes in. Not to make a decision on the basis of emotion. I know last year, not this year, when I visited the farm in Washington State, my brother took me up to Spokane or to Freeman, the very place I was telling you, went to the school with all the computers. But we had the Farmers Bureau was talking about it, and I understand you have this law in Pennsylvania that when a creek goes through your land, that you have to fence off the creek so that the cows don't get in there, and you know what, okay? But my first question is, what do you think deer and buffalo and elk or whatever, buffalo here, but deer and elk do, huh? And my brother told me, I asked him about this, the creek they were discussing wasn't even a year-round creek. It only ran for 2 months or something. And so they had this big thing. And what was so interesting to me was one of the Farm Bureau leaders got up and he said, I have learned not to try to convince people on the basis of facts. I'm giving basically a direct quote. Because the people in those organizations do not make decisions on facts. They make them on emotion. You see. That's something to recognize about the world. In young people, when you go in, recognize. If you can, in the right way, notice what Abigail did. She worked on David's emotions, didn't she? You're a just man, David. You're better than this. You're going to be king someday. She worked on his emotions, didn't she? I don't think she was faking it, by the way. I think she believed that. She knew that. But when you give the facts, if you give them such a way that they have emotion to them, and that's what you see the politicians do all the time. And also, another thing they can do, and anybody can do, is only give part of the facts, can't they? That's another, that's a dishonesty. That's another subject, frankly. So, Again, use wisdom. Proverbs 15 in verse 2, then use knowledge rightly. Oftentimes, it's in Boulder, Colorado, I believe, or they have the University of Colorado. They get some guy that's free climbing. You know what free climbing is? Without a rope? I know when we were at the Tetons years ago, you know, we had a rope up there. Boy, and I did that, belaying and all that. You know, so you had a rope, and the guy fell. I got him. Well, they do free climbing. And every once in a while, guess what you read in the paper, huh? Some guy was free climbing, and he's gone. You see the facts. You know, it's really something, you know, what goes on. Let me read you, I looked this up this morning. The Daredevils of Niagara Falls. How many have been to Niagara Falls? A lot of you, Feast of Tabernacles. You heard the Feast of Tabernacles years ago? I was up there, by the way. In Akron, what, 83 to 90? Used to go up there, loved it, it was great. But how, you know, this morning I looked it up. There's like 20, 30, or 40 people have gone over Niagara Falls in a barrel. You know? Some of them will go over on wires without any kind of cord. You know, they go on the balancing things. I think somebody did a couple years ago, didn't they? I won't even give you the gal's name, but on September the 7th, 1901, this gal planned a combined stunt. And by the way, this is from www.niagarafrontier.com if you want to look it up. Willard entered the barrel, and notice what she did. She entered the barrel with her pet dog. A pet dog. I mean, she. Well, the animal rights people had gone crazy over that one, wouldn't they? As the barrel reached the whirlpool, it became stranded. You know, the whirlpool goes around and around, so guess what the barrel does? It goes around and around. And I'll just give you the story. When they brought it to shore, the woman was dead, but the dog was alive. You know why? The dog stuck his nose in the little hole in the barrel and was able to breathe. You see, the facts are, going over Niagara Falls, a lot of people survive. Maybe that's almost too bad because people think they're going to survive. But some people die. I know, I think Cheryl and I have a picture of us, you know, how you go up there and they have a barrel and whatever, all that stuff. I think we got one in Niagara Falls of years ago. But use wisdom. Is it worth the chance? And when you're young, sometimes, oh, I'm going to do it. And so we do things that are not too smart, don't we? And one of the things that happen to us when you get older is you realize what can happen to you. Now, there's a flip side to that, too, though. You become afraid to do anything. See? I mean, there's a certain amount of faith that we have to have in God. When you walk out this door, you could, by chance, get hit with an asteroid or something, couldn't you, huh? Meteorite could hit you, couldn't it? But what are the chances of that? Does anybody worry about walking out the door? No, I don't too much. Now, when you get in your car, though, maybe you should worry a little bit, shouldn't you? It might be a good idea to put on your seatbelt. Because even if you're a good driver, maybe the other guy isn't. See, there's more of a chance there. And by the way, you're safer in an airplane than you are a car. But what happens when an airplane goes down, it makes the front page news. But when, hundreds of people are killed in the United States, you know, thousands every year, well, it makes a local paper. Parkersburg paper to make. And we have a wonderful paper. You know, the PTA meeting beats President Obama. You know, it's really interesting, the local paper. I did notice today they had some of the national news on there. They do have that too. But it's so interesting, you know, the difference between that and, you know, one of the national news organizations, the emphasis on that. But here's a big point for young people and for all of us. Evaluate, you know, there's where wisdom comes in. Evaluate the chances. There's a very sad case, I think, I think it was Colorado, where a man and his son, a few weeks ago, went hiking, and they made a wrong turn. And they found them 2 days later frozen to death. And they didn't. I don't know if they took a compass. You know, they didn't take coats. You see, Even these days, a GPS would be a wonderful thing. It would save their lives. If you're going to go anywhere, I mean, but they didn't evaluate what could happen. And when I lived in Minnesota, before I came to Akron, by the way, we lived in Wisconsin. And in a trunk of our car, especially in those days, you would have a sleeping bag, you would have a coat, and you might even have a candle. I'll never forget going to Minneapolis and St. Paul. I got gave a sermon one time, and it was, 1970-some. And I said, where is this terrible winter heard about in Minnesota? Because the winter was a very soft, easy winter. Temperature was around 50 degrees in December. It was unbelievable. Well, guess what happened 2 weeks later? By the way, they blamed me for the blizzard, But people came up there not using wisdom. And there was one sad story of a young couple. They in a car, and they went up there, and there comes a blizzard. Now, when a storm happens, sometimes in Minnesota, probably happens here too, the first thing you get is ice. So guess what happened to their car? But what they did is they panicked. And see, a car is a natural thing. It's a natural shelter for you. It's got a lot of things going. In fact, you got some gas, unless they get gas line freeze, which you can get. But if the gas is okay, then you can run that car, 20 minutes and warm it up. And you can last for a long time that way. But they got out of the car. Tried to find a farmhouse. Well, when they got out of the car, then the ice came, and they came back to the car, and guess what? They couldn't get in it. And so they had to break a window to get in the car. Well, finally, they lost their legs for the frostbite. Not using wisdom, not being in a northern area, Minnesota, where you have these winters, just a little thing like a sleeping bag, candle, a little bit of food, even just knowledge of what's going. I'll never forget when I went to Salt Lake, where they had a big cold spell, huge in Wyoming, and it was amazing. I don't remember, it was I-90, one of the big freeways there around Rock Springs, was like a traffic stop, like a parking lot with trucks, and they came up from the south and they didn't put their gas line freeze or their formulas in their diesel, and man, they were charging those truck drivers $500 to start them. That was years ago. That's what it is to actually start a fire under them, all of that to start them. Use knowledge wisely. It's very, it's very important. Wisdom in danger, Proverbs 22 and verse 3. Proverbs 22 and verse 3. If I go over time, Mr. Henson, does this stadium just disappear or something like that? Okay. Proverbs 22 and verse 3. A prudent man foresees the evil. See? And hides himself. A prudent man foresees the evil, but the simple pass on and are punished. And using wisdom, applying wisdom, is so important. Psalms 119, 98. God's law gives to us wisdom. Psalm 119, verse 98. For I have more understanding. Well, let's start in 98. We'll start in 97. Oh, how I love your law. It is my meditation all the day. You, through your commandments, make me wiser than my enemies. I have more understanding, my teachers, for your testimonies are my meditation. I understand more than the ancients. You young people can be wiser than all the professors, most of the professors in the universities, just by knowing God's law. We have a world and a nation that seems to hate God's law. Just applying and using God's law makes you wise. It makes a difference, and makes a difference in your life. It changes the way things go. Proverbs 9:8. There's a time, by the way, that you must keep your mouth shut. And the Bible talks about that. There's a time when we shouldn't say nothing. It says, do not correct a scoffer lest he hate you. Rebuke a wise man, he will love you. That's what I'm saying about the professor in the class. He's probably got a doctorate degree or a master's degree in biology, and you're just a student, and you sit up and you challenge him evolution. What's he going to do? You see what the Bible says? Don't rebuke a scoffer. And also, by the way, for young people, don't embarrass the professor in class. It's not a good idea. Whatever you do, do it respectfully. And you're going to go a lot further. Just like the officer that stops you for the traffic ticket. You know, oh, I'm sorry, officer, was I going too fast? Officer, I wasn't going too fast. What's the matter with you? You know, you misread your dial or whatever. You know, whatever. See? I tell you, there's going to be a difference. You know, I've known one young man as a relative of mine that he's talked himself out of tickets I couldn't believe. You know, because he has this kind of respectful attitude. And one time he wasn't supposed to drive home. Didn't have his driver. He had a learner's license. The officer told him to drive home. The one thing he had learned was, you know, to use his mouth correctly. He was okay in the end. See, it makes a difference. A soft answer turns away wrath. Wisdom. Don't reprove a scoffer. See, if somebody just come in, what's the matter? Why do you believe that? Well, that's why you don't go up to people and just try to convert them. Because the Bible, you know, talks about putting your perils before the swine and all that. Not that they're swine or anything. Let's go to James 3. Watch your tongue. That's a great, huge part, by the way, of wisdom. Watch your tongue. James 1 and verse 26. But if anyone thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this one's religious is useless. And we all need, there's time just to be quiet. There's a time, the best thing you can do is be quiet. James 3 talks a little bit more about this. It says, indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths, and they may obey us, and we return their whole body. Look also to the ship. Although they are so large, they are driven by fierce winds. You know, an angry word can really make a difference, can't it? A good word can be consoling and helpful. That's part of wisdom. That's part of it. It's also time to correct, as we know, for parents. The world doesn't seem to understand that anymore. But there is a time to correct. There is a time, to a certain extent, to show controlled emotion. So they understand that something has gone wrong. Notice in verse 5, even so the tongue is a little thing and boasts great things. Well, we see that today, don't we? People boasting, athletes boasting, you know, politicians boasting. And it's a good idea to control your tongue and walk humbly before God. So in conclusion, remember, wisdom can make a difference. Never forget, the Bible says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's in Proverbs. Knowledge of God, knowledge of God's word, knowledge of the kingdom of God, knowledge of the Ten Commandments can give you wisdom. And also, it's important that you control your emotions. And then you'll be able to control your tongue. And then you'll have a lot better relationship with many people. Learn to apply wisdom, and your life will be greatly improved. And you'll have a better chance of making God's kingdom.